You know, searching is an interesting thing. It really depends on the context in many ways. You would remember a couple of years ago, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, there was a tightening of security at the airports when you would travel, and there was this the rolling out, I think it was 2 years ago, the rolling out of this new machine, the X-ray machine, and the controversy about shall it be pat down or X-ray? You know, that was your choice. That was your menu option when you got to border services at the airport. I can't remember where I was going, but I remember soon after this was rolled out, it was my first opportunity to make a choice. Wasn't too keen on the X-ray circle thing going on. The person that went before me, they had a little difficulty and he had to get out and they reset it and he went back in. And so I said, I'm going to opt for the pat down. Well, who told me to make that choice? This particular border service agent was probably one of the most distracted people I've seen. Carrying on a conversation with a colleague behind the monitor while they're frisking me. Turn around and patting down. I'm saying, hey, what? Watch it. Watch what you're doing. That kind of search, for me, was only a little bit intrusive, but nothing like the scandalous occurrence you may have heard some months ago when that 95-year-old woman who was in a wheelchair, who was taken aside, and not only patted down intrusively, but asked to remove part of her garment that she needed for medical purposes. An embarrassing, terrible intrusion. In fact, an apology was uttered afterwards, after a complaint was made. Some searches we just don't want. They're too intrusive, make us too uncomfortable. They go past the line, so to speak. In some cases, it's not necessarily a physical search. It is the kind of search of our being and our motives and our motivations. Such is the kind of search to which the psalmist refers about this God who searches everything, leaves nothing at all to imagination. And you and I know that that can be uncomfortable. That kind of scrutiny of all of our foibles and all of our hidden secrets can be uncomfortable. But somehow what we hear from this psalmist is that such intrusive searching turns out not only to be not so bad, but just what the doctor ordered. Because the psalmist seems to be telling us that such intrusive searching into our hearts and our minds and our behavior and our ethics and our economics and our actions and our secrets turns out to be more like the other kind of search that all of us would want, all of us would clamor for, and want to the depths of our soul. The kind of search that is mounted when people get lost. When a hiker or a group of hikers are lost on a mountain, or a boat capsizes out at sea and a distress signal goes out, search and rescue is activated. Any of us in that circumstance wants to be found, wants to be searched for. We don't find anything intrusive about such searching because it is for our very life and survival and well-being. So it seems like this business of searching needs to be nuanced in our spiritual lives, the psalmist is trying to tell us, that what sometimes appears to be invasive and scrutinizing and over the top and too much and mind your own business, God. Turns out if we would succumb and cooperate with such searching to be the kind of rescue that we need, the kind of liberation, even from ourselves, that we need. Such is what the psalmist is saying. Listen to those words. O Lord, you have searched me and you know me. You know when I sit and when I stand, you discern my thoughts. Even before a word is on my mouth, you know it. You've seen everything. And it turns out that's a good thing. Because the words that are used in this psalm communicate an incredible, profound intimacy. Sometimes not rendered as well in English. Yada, the word for know, is used 13 times in the first 6 verses. In Hebrew, yada is to experience intimately. Not just head knowledge. You don't just know me. Check off, there's Anthony Bailey. Check off, there's Barbara Fott. Yes, I know, I count my nameless sheep. No. You experience me. You experience my thoughts. You experience my shame. You experience my regret. You experience my sin. You know it all. You see it and you search it. It's too much for me, says the psalmist. And yet, delights in being held in such knowledge. Claim, such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It's wonderful because it's what we need. Who wants a God who only half knows us? Who wants a God who offers us gifts of love and mercy and forgiveness, but doesn't know what we're being forgiven for? Why we are being loved? This is a God that knows us through and through, searches us, knows us, and even more blessedly, loves us. I think it depends whether we see this as good news or too intrusive news on where we are in knowledge of ourselves. This is a season of lots of weddings around Parkdale and around the place, and couples that I'm working with, helping to prepare for their life of marriage. One of the instruments that I use with them is a reflective tool to invite them to ask questions of themselves that they may not usually or regularly ask. I just want to share a few of them. There are two sides of this questionnaire. One of them helps them to reflect on their life strengths and accomplishments, but also on some of life's challenges. So some of the questions sound like this. It's a sentence completion sheet. So you would complete the sheet. One thing I like about myself is... One thing others like about me. One thing I do very well. Those who know me are glad that I... A value I try hard to practice every day is, an example of my caring for others is, something I'm handling better this year than last year is, a recent temptation I managed to overcome is, if I had to say one good thing about myself, I'd say, one important thing I intend to do within the next 2 months is, you catch the drift. Right? Good questions, don't you think? Not the kinds of questions we ask ourselves every day. But there are other questions, too, on the other side about some of the challenges. My biggest problem is, something I do that gives me trouble is, something I fail to do that gets me into trouble is, a value that I fail to put into practice as regularly as I would like is, what others dislike about me is, a problem that keeps coming back again and again is, if I could change one thing about myself, it would be... You see, when we begin to ask ourselves these kinds of searching questions, we discover why it is that certain kinds of intimacy, certain kinds of intrusions, certain ways in which God is seeking to communicate to us and with us takes hold or doesn't take hold. It depends where we are. what others perceive. There's a very interesting and intriguing, a lovely poem written by Dietrich Bonhoeffer when he was incarcerated. It's a reflective poem, and it gathers up this same kind of search into himself to know, is he ready to receive what God is intending? This is the poem. Who am I? They often tell me, I step from my self-confinement calmly, cheerfully, firmly, like a squire from his country house. Who am I? They often tell me I used to speak to my warders freely and friendly and clearly, as though they were mine to command. Who am I? They also tell me I bore the days of misfortune equally, smilingly, proudly, like one accustomed to win. Am I then really all which other men tell of, or am I only what I myself know of myself? Restless and longing and sick like a bird in a cage, struggling for breath as though hands were compressing my throat, yearning for colors, for flowers, for the voices of birds, thirsting for words of kindness, for neighborliness, tossing in expectation of great events, powerlessly trembling for friends in an infinite distance, weary and empty at praying and thinking, at making, faint and ready to say farewell to it all. Who am I? This or the other? Am I one person today and tomorrow another? Am I both at once a hypocrite before others? And before myself a contemptibly woebegone weakling? Or is something within me still like a beaten army, fleeing in disorder from victory already achieved? Who am I? They mock me, these lonely questions of mine. Whoever I am, thou knowest it, O God, I am yours. A wonderful contemporary reflection on that which the psalmist is inviting us to open to. To be honest about what it is that we feel, believe about ourselves, and particularly what we believe about ourselves in relationship to God. This psalmist recognizes that there's a profound commitment of God to us, to the world, and feels this personally. Claims that I am fearfully and wonderfully made. That needs to be explained a little bit. That is an incredible statement. When the psalmist recognizes that each gift of child, I see you, little one. Hold him up there, Joe. Every gift. Every child knit together in mother's womb, fearfully and wonderfully made. Those words are very powerful, especially in the Hebrew. Fearfully, sometimes we tend to think of being afraid, and that word has gotten transmorphed, as it were, into a fearful thing, something like fright. But in the Bible and in Hebrew, the way it's used, fearfully has to do, it's almost a synonym for love. In its root, yara, it is specially, tenderly made. And the other word, wonderfully, has to do, pala, has to do with an incredible, striking distinctiveness. It is usually connected with an act of God. So the psalmist is saying, I am specially formed in striking elegance. Say that 10 times a day in the mirror. You'll begin to feel differently about who you are and who this God is. This psalmist recognizes there's something, despite all of the things in our hearts and minds that convince us otherwise, there is profound beauty. And this psalmist meditates on this day and night. Even when he falls asleep, having given thanks for the wondrous nature of God's blessing, wakes up still doing the same thing. Now make no mistake. This is a God who knows you and me inside out, and those things we have experienced and those things we believe. There's nothing that you can hide. You remember those feelings of contempt about which you became ashamed at one point because they were held for those whom you love. A spouse, a child, an elderly parent, a dear friend. Yes, God sees that and knows that too. You remember the time when you contributed significantly to that project, that initiative at work, and a colleague or others took all of the credit and you got blamed for not pulling your weight. God knows that too, knows the feelings too, knows that, even if nobody else does. You remember that time when you tried your best to do the right thing for your friend and it turned out horribly wrong. God knows and sees that motivation, knows it full well. Nobody else does. Despite how you try to explain it, it could not be understood. God knows that too. You remember the time that you were so low, you're ashamed even to think about it now, that you contemplated ending your life. To spare your family maybe the shame, you wanted to make it look like an accident. God knows that too. You remember. God knows it. You remember the worst thing that you've done, the sin about which you are deeply ashamed and regretful. God knows it. God sees it. What the psalmist is saying, that as profoundly searched as you and I are in that moment, so too, are we affirmed as being strikingly, magnificently, and lovingly made by this God who will not give up. And furthermore, you remember the hatred, perhaps, that you cultivate towards someone? Oh, sorry, I forgot where I was. There aren't anybody here at Parkdale like that. Sorry. No hate here at all, I'm sure. But in case there are people you know who do. Even this psalm accommodates such vituperous, such urgent abhorrence. Because what the psalm is about is honesty and truth. And so the psalmist, in fact, the lectionary reading cuts out these verses. And people, when they read this psalm, like to skip over these verses. How I hate those who despise you. I abhor those. I hate them with a pure hate, says the psalmist. There's sometimes when that which is in our heart and in our lives towards other people is terrible. We don't want anyone to know that, but we feel it. Well, the psalmist says, you know what? God knows it. Speak it out to God. Speak it out to God. Let God deal with it with you. And here's how the psalmist invites us to do it. How does the psalmist end this psalm? Search me, O God. Remember, he began by saying, you search me. So he knows this is God's modus operandi. But at the end, in response to this hatred, says, search me and know me. And see if there's any offensive way in me. Is there stuff I'm doing I'm not supposed to do? Is there stuff I'm feeling and cultivating towards others I'm not supposed to? Is there resentment that we have become very comfortable and cozy with that is offensive to us and others and you, oh God? See what's going on in me. Cleanse it. Deal with it. Help me move through it and past it so that I can return to the way everlasting. There's no pretending here at all. It's the truth into which we are invited to live and inhabit. It's the kind of searching that feels like a terrible pat down. What is it in the paper, the thing that came out? People messing with your junk. Yeah, intrusive, and it feels so scandalous. But as we have said, and as the psalmist has declared to us, it is a kind of searching and knowing and loving that all of us, lost at sea or on the side of a mountain or even in the wasteland of our own confusion, desperately want and need for a God that will reach in and rescue. Search and rescue. This is what this God has done in Jesus Christ. Has come, searched, known, and loved. This is good news. It can't be anything other than good news. May yours be the gift of a profound, spiritual, loving pat down by God through your whole soul, so that you may know how profoundly loved you are. Wonderfully, strikingly, majestically made. Amen.